From the UBS studios in New York City, I'm Anthony Pastore. Thank you very much for joining me. I'm sitting today with Jamie Howard. Jamie is the deputy head of fraud risk management and investigations here at UBS. And we are going to speak about a very important topic as part of our cybersecurity series. So the topic today we'll be talking about is the elderly and how they lose billions a year to scammers, but we may not actually always know how to protect them. In many of these scams, an older person may be targeted more often than any other age groups and fall victim more often in what is called grandma scams. I think that's kind of the term that's being used. More often than not, these victims then make easy targets once they've been identified as prey. So all this is made easier for the scammers if the children of older parents live far away from these parents and thus are unable to protect them from fraudulent phone calls or emails or even mailed letters from con artists. So the crux of the piece is to help baby boomers learn the most effective ways to protect their parents, both pragmatically, but also how to broach this topic so as not to make their older parents feel like their independence is being infringed upon by the demands of power of attorney, or other means to control their financial lives. So what we really want to talk about today is how you can help your parents protect themselves and what the emotional and practical ways are to do this. So, Jamie, thank you very much for being here. It's good to speak with you, and I know we've got a lot to get to. It often happens that children of baby boomers are concerned about their parents being conned with various mediums. And I know we've all heard about these phone calls that they get, or these emails, or even if they're, you know, they have phones, they get text messages. So what are some of these common scams that you hear about?
So, I mean, sadly, Anthony, as you say, it is all too prevalent. And I'll give you a couple of examples of real instances, if that's useful. I think it helps people understand, you know, that these are frauds that we've actually seen, sadly, perpetrated against our clients. The grandparent scam that you mentioned is probably one of the most common, and that manifests itself pretty much in the following way. There would be a phone call, usually late at night or first thing in the morning, just as people are getting up slightly, perhaps, you know, getting used to the feel of the day or just getting ready for bed. And there'll be a caller who professes to be a grandchild. You know, hey, grandma, hey, grandpa, it's me. I'm in real trouble, you know, in London, or I'm overseas, I'm in Central South America, I need you to wire me some money. And the grandparent goes, you know, the phone line will often be crackly, you know, is that you, Simon? Is that you, Mark? Is it? Yeah, it's me, Mark. You know, social engineering the answers from the grandparent, at which point, you know, the fraudster is exploiting the emotion of love. You know, the grandparent feels very very proud that they've been reached out to, perhaps instead of the child's parent.
Yeah.
And that's exploited by the fraudster. And that's where really we start to see the whole sort of logical chain go out the window, as you might think that people think this through. You know, they don't tend to call the parent. They don't tend to call the child back. And so they fall for it. And it works. It's a form of social engineering. Then they're required to send often payment by wire or prepaid cards, Target cards we've seen, Walmart cards we've seen, TransUnion, things like that, to the tune of $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 often.
Wow.
And that money's sent, and of course we've no way of getting it back.
Right.
So sadly it's a prevalent scam. We had a very sad case this week, and this really underlines the importance of safeguarding your information in and around your own home. We had an elderly lady who had some contractors in her house. They were provided by her insurance company, and yet these contractors behind her back went through her personal information, stole her documentation, stole her ID, photocopies of her, believe it or not, photocopies of her passport, her bank statements. And then they used that information to create a scam where one of the contractors turned up at the house perpetrating as an FBI agent, saying that they were going to run a sting operation. I mean, this is such a complex scam. Saying that they're going to run a sting operation against their financial advisor, and she wasn't allowed to talk to the bank about it.
Oh boy!
And very sadly, again, you know, she lost money before the branch, you know, finally realized what's going on. So these are the sorts of scams that we see. There are many others, but I would say those are just two examples of the sorts of, you know, different ends of the spectrum. Of course, actually having someone in your home must be terrifying.
Incredible.
But the grandparent scam and this particular scam of having someone come into your house and steal your information. Those are the sorts of things I think we need to be aware of at either end of that spectrum.
I think I mentioned to you when we were talking earlier that my grandma was nearly a victim. She did not succumb to the to the trick of the phone call, the grandma scam, the cousin that she rattled off all her grandkids' names because of the crackly phone, just like you described, Jamie. But she had just seen something on TV that warned of these scams within the last week, and she hung up the phone and then actually called me, and I said, you did the right thing. But, you know, luckily she was educated. So we hope that this is what will come of our conversation today, is that, you know, more people will become educated in the fact that these are real scams and that there are ways to protect that. So that being said, Jamie, what are some of the measures that we can take when helping to protect, you know, our parents and our, you know, our elderly loved ones?
Sure. I mean, you know, I'm the son of an elderly mother. UBS prides itself. One of the things that we do very well, I think, as a firm is looking after our clients in such a way that we have a very high contact with our clients. And that's how we safeguard our clients against fraud. You know, if you phone up your branch, your financial advisor or the support team will know your voice. They'll know you, they'll know your situation. And that actually is the best way that we find defeats fraudsters. And I guess one of the things that I would say in answer to your question is, you know, is I guess have a very good understanding of what your elderly relative, your friend, the person that you're taking care of, have a good understanding of their situation. And so when something happens that seems out of the usual, or they have a life event that might lead to a change in their circumstance, you're aware of it, and you can discuss that with that particular individual. And I think that we find that's the, you know, those families who are looking out, even if they are at distance, those families who are looking out for their relatives in that way are the ones who are most likely to pick up on the potential fraud. But of course, not everyone's in the position where they can do that. You know, life today moves at such a pace, it's not always easy to maintain that level of contact. But so therefore, I'd say the next best thing, and it's something that you and I were, you know, talking about before we went on air, is this new regulation that's just come out in February, so last month, and by one of the regulators who are really making sure that financial institutions are looking out for the elderly and the vulnerable. And this requires financial institutions, and I'm pleased to say that UBS is doing this has been doing this for some time already, but this requires financial institutions to nominate what's called a trusted contact person.
Yeah, tell us about that, Jamie, because it sounds like it's something that's really necessary and important and timely, obviously, in this situation.
Yeah, so what is a trusted contact person? So a trusted contact person has no ability to authorize disbursements. They are not seen as a listed person on that account that enables them to actually conduct any activity on the account. So forget power of attorney. This is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is someone who you could reach out to, who the branch could reach out to, where they suspect either abuse or that they're dealing with a client who is vulnerable. They can reach out to that person. It might be a relative, but or it might be a friend, and they can say, hey, you know, is everything okay?
Right.
Because we're seeing certain signs of activity, or we're having certain discussions with the client that just don't seem normal for that person. And so the trusted contact person gives us the ability within the regulations to reach out to that person and discuss that individual's financial circumstances. Without a trusted contact person listed on that account, we've got nowhere to go. All we can do is talk to the client.
Right. What's the best way to become a trusted contact person?
The branch, for new clients, onboarding, the branches will, we can't force a trusted contact person onto a client's account, as you probably understand. But at onboarding, you know, when you join the bank, you'll be asked if you want to nominate a trusted contact person. It's strongly recommended that you do so. And then periodically, when we do reviews of clients' accounts with the branch or the FA, then that's the time to mention it. Or just phone up the branch, phone up your branch, and say, you know, I heard this podcast, I listened to this broadcast. I would like to nominate a trusted contact person on my account. So anytime you like, anytime at all, you can get in touch with the branch. You can raise that question and it'll be done for you there and then if it hasn't been done already.
Perfect. Thank you, Jamie. So yeah, the advice there is if you are a client of UBS, reach out to your financial advisor. Okay, so just to switch gears for a second, one of the studies that we have seen is that shows that women are twice as likely to be targeted for a lot of these scams, especially when they're, you know, in their 80s and when they're living alone. For example, like my grandma, she was the perfect target. But for any scam, they say, you know, the most vulnerable time is, you know, a couple of years after a major stress, like the loss of a spouse or some kind of a change in health or housing. So what are some things that a child can do or be in order to protect their parents, especially their elderly moms or grandmas who are living alone and, you know, they may not really understand, you know, what the ramifications are of something like this?
Well, I think the first one and the best defense we have is awareness.
Right.
And you know, the figure that you quote is sadly true, and it's a sensitive subject. And no one wants to, you know, no one wants to identify a group of people as being more vulnerable than another. But it's right. a sad fact that these are people who are preyed upon by some really seriously evil and really very complex and sophisticated teams of people. I mean, to give you an idea, it's assessed at the moment, and I was looking at the figures before we came on air. $36.5 to $40 billion a year in the United States alone, they believe, is the assessed cost of fraud against the elderly or the vulnerable. I mean, wow. It's a significant
that's
amount.
That's a big
of fraud.
Number.
And that's money that's going to some seriously bad people.
Mm.
So, as I say, the first thing is awareness. So if, as I say, you know, if your elderly relative does go through a life-changing situation, the loss of a spouse or some form of medical condition, then I would say preempt, perhaps, the possibility that this person will be preyed upon, because a lot of that information is out there. It's in the newspapers, right? I mean, you know, the death of a loved one, an obituary. If it's a medical condition there, and there are people working in hospitals who are quite prepared, and we've seen this, quite prepared to sell this information for very few dollars onto scammers who can then exploit that individual. So awareness is the first thing. We've talked about the trusted contact person. I cannot stress enough the importance of, in a situation that you describe, then you know, nominating a trusted contact person really does go a long way. Does go a long way to doing that. And really, I think thirdly, it's just paying attention to. And so many times we see people who are become the victims of fraud, but they realize too late because they just aren't doing simple things like checking statements. You know, if we are warned in time, or if we're given notice in time that there has been a fraud, particularly check frauds. You know, we can act quickly to make sure that the loss isn't taken by the client or indeed the bank. So things like just simple things like checking statements, like making sure that the checks that you order arrive and that your relative has them, that they come through the mail, you know, because often, you know, we see checks stolen from mailboxes. It's just the simple things. I mean, there are many more complex things you can do as well, but I think the simple things are often the best defense.
Right. It sounds like just being proactive and like you said, raising awareness. That seems to be the biggest takeaway, I think, for me as well. Obviously, there must be some resources out there. I know they think the IRS has kind of online tools to help protect against fraud. What else is out there, Jamie, that you could tell our listeners about if they want to find tools and some resources to, you know, either educate or help themselves?
Well, I think, you know, a discussion with your financial advisor is absolutely fundamental. And the great thing about our financial advisors is they're not afraid to raise their hand when they get a question like that they don't know the answer to. And so they'll reach back to groups like ours. And, you know, we're quite prepared to offer advice in specific circumstances where situations might be out of the norm. You know, I often hear people saying, you know, I've got LifeLock or I've got, you know, these credit monitoring services, and they're great. But you know, they cost money, and that may not be for everybody. One of the most simple things that you can do to protect your accounts is to take out what's called a credit freeze. And if you're at that point in life where, you know, you've got all the, you don't see yourself ever taking out another mortgage, or you've got all the credit cards you want, or you're not going to take out a car loan anymore, you know, then simply freeze your credit. And so all you do is you reach out to the three credit unions, and Equifax is just one. And for $15, they will freeze your credit. And what that means is if a fraudster wishes to take out a credit card in your name, which we see, you know, in some firms, we see, you know, Chase, Citi, all these big banks that are constantly putting letters through your letterbox saying, you know, here's a credit card, 0% interest. Fraudsters fill those out in someone else's name. But part of the process that's required in order for that credit card to be issued is a credit check. Now, if your credit is frozen, then the credit agency will refuse the credit check because it's blocked. And for $15, there are three credit agencies. So for $15 to each of those, and your branch is absolutely, you know, branches are all over this. The branch will be able to recommend it. It's simply impossible to take out a loan or commit a form of identity theft through that means if your credit is frozen, and it's $15. Now, if subsequently you decide you do want to take out a credit card or you do wish to take out a loan, you simply write to the credit agency, and I think actually you can do it online now, and they lift it, the credit check is done, and then they reimpose it again.
Mm.
So, you know, there's no expensive sort of monthly contracts for LifeLock and other such things. That's absolutely fine for some people, but actually the most simple but the best protection is to simply freeze your credit.
Wow. It's such a simple step and something I wasn't even aware of. So I'm really glad you mentioned that to us. And if you have existing credit cards, can you still use them? Is it just to establish new credit? Is
yes.
that how that
so,
works?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've got a mortgage or if you've got a loan or if you've got existing credit cards, it doesn't affect those at all.
Right.
What it does is it prevents people from taking out new credit cards, new loans in your name, which, of course, you wouldn't know about until they default. And then suddenly you've got, you know, some form of debt collection, you know, calling upon right. you to make that good. So, yeah, it doesn't affect your current financial practices
right.
at all.
That's great. Jamie, thank you. This has been really terrific. And I, again, the big takeaways again for me are, you know, if you're listening into this, speak to your relatives, your, you know, to your elderly, you know, parents or, you know, whoever's in your life that you know could actually use some of this awareness. And Jamie gave us some really easy steps on how to have these conversations and things you can be aware of and make them aware of as well. So Jamie Howard, thank you so much. It's great to see you. Some great stuff here. And I think the content here is very helpful and extremely important, especially this time of year when we're looking at, you know, tax returns, and it's incredibly also much more vulnerable this time of year, especially for people who are living on their own and things like that. So, Jamie, thanks very much. Good
Great.
To see you.
Thank you very much indeed.
And, you know, as Jamie mentioned a couple of times, and I mentioned as well, if you're a client of UBS, there are many resources that you can get from your financial advisor. They can help you make a lot of these decisions, become that trusted contact person. There's a lot of things they can do. There's a lot of information as well as on UBS online services. So reach out to your financial advisor and make sure to engage them in the conversation. From New York City, I'm Anthony Pastore. Thank you very much for joining me, and we'll speak to you soon.